This is the K-pop cast, but today it is the K-drama cast. We're bringing it back this week to bring you the best scenes and ideas in K-dramas. I am your host, PD Nim Michaela, and welcoming me for this show is somebody you've heard before. It's Syed.
Hi everyone, this is Syed. I am the founder and editor of Genius Korea. It's the giant lyric website that you might have seen around. We transcribe and translate your favorite Korean music. And I'm also an avid K-drama watcher. I started watching K-dramas in 2015, 2016. And I just love watching K-dramas and like dissecting into all the references and the hidden meanings and all of that good stuff.
So happy to finally have you on an episode of the K-drama cast. I can't wait to get into this conversation.
I know, it's been such a long time coming.
Yeah, so we're diving in this week to the 2024 record-breaking hit K-drama Queen of Tears. But before we dive into that topic, guys, don't forget to join the K-pop cast community on Slack. Links to everything in the episode description. Okay, let's get started. The light to my darkness, I just realized it. 여름 밤 축 재불 꽃들처럼 쏟아져 내려. When you tell me your dreams, I don't need a reason. 어느새 너를 바라보는 나의 그림자. I'm stay for a lifetime. I'm stay with you forever and more. All right, so before we get started, we are going to proceed, no spoilers, but we will give a warning when we do veer into spoiler territory. This show, like, compared to the other shows we've talked about, like DP, Sky Castle, and like Flower of Evil, it just ended like a few weeks ago. So it's understandable that I know I had like needed some time to process the show and even after watching it. So right now, without spoilers, we're going to get into Queen of Tears. So Queen of Tears, Korean title 눈물의 여왕, is a 2024 TVN drama distributed by Netflix, where the queen of department stores and the small-town prince of supermarkets weather a marital crisis until love miraculously begins to bloom again. The series depicts the dizzying crisis and miraculous rekindling of love between Hong Ae-in, played by Kim Ji-won, a third-generation chaebol heiress of the queen's group, and Baek Hyung-woo, played by Kim Soo-hyun, the son of farmers from Yongduri, and their 3 years of marriage. Other notable main cast members are Park Sung-hoon, the actor we love to hate, who plays Yoo Eun-sung. Also, Kwak Dong-yeon, our lovable himbo, playing Hong Ae-in's younger brother, Hong Soo-chul, and Lee Ju-bin playing his wife, Chon Da-hae. With that kind of pitch of the show, Syed, how else would you kind of like introduce this show to somebody who hasn't watched it yet, you know, without spoilers?
I would say it's a very typical K-drama.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good starter K-drama too. It has all the
right
elements that fans usually are drawn towards for in terms of K-dramas, at least. So, and it's like really well done.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say it's a good starter K-drama for anyone who's looking to, you know, dip their toes into the K-drama world.
Right. If you're scrolling on Netflix and this pops up, which it probably will, because that's why we're talking about this, because this was a very record-breaking historical drama of the year, because it ranked top 10 on Netflix in 68 countries, including the US, Canada, Japan, Australia, India. And very notably, after the final episode aired on April 28th, 2024, it became the number 3 cable TV program per household with a percentage of 24.9%. and number two in the nation with a total view count of 6.4 million views. And that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a staggering statistic.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also very interesting because we talk about, I talked about on the K-Drama Cast before about shows, especially that are distributed on Netflix, that are really popular internationally, but not necessarily with the Korean public.
Yeah.
But this is one of those unique shows where we're all on the same page with how at least bingeable and how much we've been enjoying watching the show.
Yeah, I think that, and that's very true. And I think it's also like, it's very early in the year.
Yes.
So for something to be so successful, and especially during like the winter, spring time, usually things that are, you know, like defining of the year happen like late spring, early summer. Also like in terms of the length of the drama, it is a 16 episode drama. So it went by quite fast, which is again, like it shows the power of the drama itself, that every episode was able to attract that many viewers and the demographics. And because usually you would see something like that with a bit like longer dramas as they go on, and then they start picking up the pace. And by, you know, episode 16 or 17, that's when you start seeing the real big numbers come in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this just started off really high and then ended on a really even higher note.
Mm-hmm. Right. And some other notable, like important things about this drama, it was actor Kim Soo Hyun's return to K-drama land after 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I mean, he did have like a little internet series in 2021, but this is like his first return to like a network television show after It's Okay Not to Be Okay in 2020. And then also his like return to OST, right? After 10 years
yeah.
since his two songs from My Love from Another Star, which, you know, we love a triple threat male lead.
Yes.
Also actress Kim Ji-won really kind of solidified her presence as like the one of the top female actresses in Korea, bagging lots of brand deals after this show or then during this show. You know, after working on this series with writer Park Ji-eun, she's now achieved what people have called like the big four of working with like the four top screenwriters in Korea, including Kim Eun-suk, Lim Sang-chan, and Park Hae-young, with her shows, her appearances in Descendants of the Sun, Fight for My Way, and My Liberation Notes.
Yeah. I think it's like almost like her breakout role, I would say. Because previously, like obviously Fight for My Way was quite popular for her, but she was more known for the cute side character, almost like a supporting character. But I think like this really solidified her as like a female lead of like a big production rom-com drama, like major cable television lead.
Right. Especially like in her role in Fight for My Way, which all of her like Aegyo cute scenes
yeah.
from that show are so memeable in Korea, and people emulate them all the time. But it is so great to see her, you know, taking on more dramatic roles, because I really loved her role in My Liberation Notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, getting to see her do something a little bit more deep and then
yeah.
bringing that energy into this role with some, you know, also cute moments, because there is some comedy in the show as well.
Yeah. I think it's a nice, like, almost like a mix of her roles in Fight for My Way and My Liberation Notes. Like, I think she was able to utilize more of her skill set in Queen of Tears, because, like, it asked for her to be vulnerable, but also, you know, the typical, like, female lead of, like, being sassy and romantic and all of those things. So, yeah, I liked it.
Right. So going back to the writer of this show, Park Ji-eun, When it comes to projects that she's written before, we have, you know, My Love from Another Star that Kim Soo-yeon was the star in, The Producers, which Kim Soo-yeon was also in,
yep.
Legend of the Blue Sea, Crash Landing on You. She has like a lot of big hits under her belt, and you can kind of think of Kim Soo-hyun as one of her muses, I think, as far as like male leads go. There was this one thing that came up online. People were talking about like that she had actually registered this title of Queen of Tears back in 2010. But I don't think necessarily that the show that she wrote back in 2010 is the show that we got. I think the kind of naming scheme of Queen of is kind of something that she's done before. Like she had a 2009 drama called Queen of Housewives and a 2010 drama called Queen of Reversals, which is actually kind of a similar gender reverse plot to this show. So I think we do see some of those like older style tropes come up in this show, I don't necessarily think that this is like a 2010 or 2011 show in 2024, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's like dated in any way. It, like, as you said, like it obviously like has the tropes and it has the familiarity of K-dramas, but I think it definitely is like quite fresh. But I do think like if the rumor is true that she, you know, registered the title a decade ago, I think I can understand why. You know, like, I think it's it's something that feels very much like she developed it for a long time. Like, we're going to get into more about the story and all of those things later, but I think this is something definitely that's like she's been working on it. You know, it doesn't feel like a rushed project. Like, it's something that she had to sit with a little bit.
Okay, yeah. So before we veer into spoiler territory, I know, because we want to get into all of our quibbles and things about the show.
I was like very careful about that. I was like,
yeah, because this is the K-pop cast. So I do kind of want to add a few points of why, you know, K-pop fans would be interested in this show. Some amazing names on this OST, guys. So we have 17, Busook Soon, Kim Tae-rae from Zero Base One, Crush, Haze, Paul Kim, Isaac Hong, all featured on this show. I think Crush is excited to have a new song to sing at people's weddings other than Beautiful from Guardian.
Oh my god. Yeah, I mean, it's star-studded almost, the lineup. And I think a lot of fans were really excited because the drama itself, it was shaping out to be quite big with Kim So-hyun's involvement and the screenwriter returning after a bit after Crash Landing on You. And so the fans were excited to have an OST which almost like, you know, lives up to the hype of the drama itself. And it's also like really special for me, at least, because I love OSTs, by the way. Like, I love OSTs so much. But we didn't have like a defining OST in 2023. And we saw that struggle in end of year shows. That's how I know. If you go back to the nominations at, you know, Melon Music Awards or Mnet Asian Music Awards and things like that, you will see like the list of OSTs, nobody recognizes what those songs are or from which drama those songs are.
Oh no.
There was a BTS song from Bastions, like only BTS fans know it. So I'm just like, especially because if you think about the previous years from like 2022, we had the OST for Business Proposal, the song by Melomans, Love Maybe, that was like so popular. Then we also had True Beauty with all the quirky, you know, Cha Yun Woo's song and Yuju from GFriend. We also had Hospital Playlist. It was super popular in Korea domestically. Yeah. They did really well.
Built into the name, there are so many iconic songs in that show.
Exactly. Iconic songs, and like we had Joy from Red Velvet, you know, with international popularity, but we also had like Jo Jung Suk and like the band that was in the drama for domestic popularity. And so it's like, it's really nice to have another like big show with an equally like popular OST.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, 10 centimeters, Tell Me It's Not a Dream and Crush Love You With All My Heart and, you know, 17 BSS is on it and Kim Tae-ri from Zero Base One is on it. And like, and those OSTs like live up to the, you know, the status of like being an iconic OST. The only thing competing right now is My Demon's OST, which is really popular like earlier in the year. So yeah, I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, the only OST that I can't listen to just yet is Kim Soo Hyun's OST, which
we'll get into
in a second why that one is so hard to listen to.
Without any spoilers, I do want to mention Kim Soo Hyun's obviously returning almost in 10 years to do any song, not just an OST. And also like just that song being the last one in the show, like, you know, that's what I'm talking about. Like, this show has all the tropes and the, you know, the things that people love about K-dramas, you know, like the male lead performing the last OST of the drama. That is like an iconic thing to do.
So early 2000s, 2010s K-drama.
Exactly. We also recently had Dr. Slump with Park Hyun-sik.
Yeah.
And he did an OST too, and it was the last OST of the drama, which made it extra special. So, like, I love, you know, like that little touch of, like, just to add more to the emotional aspect of the drama.
And it's something that's so K-drama, because, like, you don't necessarily expect male leads in, or at least here in the U.S. and Western dramas to, you know, be performing songs or be able to sing at all, really.
Yeah. I mean, OSTs, like, that's one of the biggest reasons why I love K-dramas and OSTs is, like, OSTs are very K-drama thing, you know? Like, we obviously have soundtrack albums in the U.S. and for, like, stage performances and movies and whatnot, but to have original music be played in, you know, all the pivotal scenes in a drama and the important scenes, that is something so unique, and I don't think anyone can like replicate something like that anywhere else.
Okay, so let's get into it. So, guys, spoilers ahead. Turn back now if you haven't finished the show yet, or don't if you don't mind and just want to hear our thoughts on the show. So, we're gonna continue. So, our first question for this section of the show. So, Syed, in your opinion, do you think Queen of Tears lived up to its hype, its potential with as having like a compelling narrative with characters and story, and did it stick the landing after you watched the finale for you?
You know what? I think so. I think it, for me at least, like it had a bit of a shaky start because obviously like the hype around it was really massive, like even before the first episode aired. Like everyone who is a fan of Kim Soo Hyun or anything, it was just that people were tuning into this. So as everyone else tuned in, I tuned in as well. And the first episode was kind of underwhelming for me.
Oh no!
I was like, huh. I don't know. I was like, just, you know, the characters weren't like convincing enough for me, especially because the premise of the show, the way that Netflix described it and, you know, media outlets were saying, it was like this married couple and like they're going through a crisis and somehow love like blooms again and like finds a way to like, you know, bring them together again. And for me, the first thing was just that, you know, like they are not convincing as a married couple. And I don't know if I want to get into this right now, but like it is because K-dramas don't have married couples that look like that. And So I had a certain kind of image in my head of what K-drama married couples look like. And so I was just like, this does not feel convincing. Like the female lead feels too cold. The male lead feels too just, you know, clueless almost. And so I was like, what's really going on here? But yeah, no, I think as the story developed, and I think this is a very specific thing for Park Ji-yeon as a screenwriter to do, is that mm-hmm. you know, she really builds a story. She knows how to do that. So yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I was also, we talked about this a little bit before the recording about how I was a little worried because I really hated the female lead. I thought she was a bitch, and I had no idea how Kim Soo-yeon's character would have fallen in love with her at all. And she reminded me of other characters that like IU's character in Hotel de Luna and Song Ye-ji's character in It's Okay to Not Be Okay. And like, I just did not like those characters. They were just, they were, you know, the haughty, prim and proper, you know.
Yeah. Pretty gowns.
Ice queen.
In the words of Aretha Franklin, pretty gowns.
Yeah, and, you know, generally kind of abusive towards the male leads in the show, I would say. So I also had a bit of a rocky start in those first few episodes. But then we get to learn more about them. And then we start to get into their history and, like, their meet cutes and, you know, their marriage and the issues that came up with their marriage. And so as you see these characters' story unfold, you start to, those questions start to become answered, which is why I stuck around for the show initially, because there's so much subtle foreshadowing that pays off as you keep going with this show.
Yeah. I think I also had like a bit of a trouble, like, adjusting my mind around the premise of that, spoiler alert, she's sick.
So, spoiler alert, she has cancer.
She has cancer. And so I'm like, I had a little bit of a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that she just revealed this, you know, life-altering disease that she has. And the male lead is thinking, oh, I don't have to file for divorce because I'm going to be free in like a few months. And that to me was just like that felt more of like a black comedy kind of premise instead of a rom-com premise, especially from like coming from Kim Soo-yeon.
Right.
And so I was just like, I just had like a really hard time like thinking like, whoa, that's messed up. Like, why is that the premise? Or, you know? And like, we've had this conversation about like other K-dramas as well, like making light of like situations like cancer and, mm-hmm. you know, like something like that. Like, for example, in Extraordinary Attorney Woo, there was a lot of, you know, it made a lot of fans mad that, you know, they were like making light of someone having cancer. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like this was also kind of like bordering on that. So that like added to my skepticism of the drama, like in the first few episodes.
That's one of the major criticisms. That's part of the major criticisms that a lot of people have had for this show so far is the big three. It has cancer, it has car crashes, and it has amnesia. Like, it has those core tropes that we've seen time and time again in K-dramas. This show is not free from those three things.
The doom truck of car crashes.
Right. And that adds to Kim Soo-hyun's character, you know, being Stephanie likened it to his character in My Love from Another Star. He's like the prim, proper, well-educated guardian angel that miraculously is able to survive everything to protect his ice queen. Like, that's...
Yeah.
He survives a car crash.
Yeah.
What? Like in this show, he's a human. That shouldn't work. And like her cancer.
He survived a car crash. He survived a shooting. He survived like what? He survived being dragged through the snow in like the dead of winter, with all those injuries for his ice queen. I was just like, wow. Okay, it's like really living up to the drama tropes.
Right. And to be honest, at the end of the day, despite all that, I still really enjoyed watching the show. I feel like when I was going through it, I turned off that one part of my brain that has seen all of these tropes 1,001 times and was just falling in love with the chemistry that Kim Soo-hyun had with Kim Ji-won. Like just that you mentioned this, like they don't look like the normal married couple, but they still look good.
I think the reason why everyone kept coming back to it was the chemistry. Mm-hmm. And I think like they did a really good job of, you know, convincing the audience that they are a married couple falling in love. But I think, I mean, like, they've obviously, like, they did a really good job as mm-hmm. actors. And so I think despite the, you know, familiar tropes and all the cliches and all of those things. And, you know, to be honest, I feel like rom-coms thrive on that. You mm. know, like, you need the typical, like, misunderstanding between the female and male lead, or like, mm-hmm. you know, the supporting characters trying to like, you know, patch things up between the two, you know, like rom-coms like thrive on that. And if it's like well done, then I don't mind it. Like, I don't mind seeing the, you know, those kinds of like cheesy, quirky moments between the romantic leads. So I think it was well done. Like the screenwriter is like, kudos to her for like incorporating those things in like a really fun and still fresh way of doing it.
Yeah. And not just with our leads, like this show has a very large cast, and it gives each character their own time. Like probably, again, one of those reasons I kept coming back to the show was I kept falling in love with all of these characters as we learn more about them. And especially since there are no weak links in this cast, like everybody is pulling off every performance so well, especially like our side couple, Kwak Dong-hyun and Lee Ju-bin, like they're, oh my gosh, I could have watched the whole drama with their story, especially.
I know. I think the ensemble cast, what I really liked about the ensemble cast, specifically from like a writing perspective at least, was that even though it's this like giant family, and, you know, obviously like they're being like super duper rich, I did feel like they made it simple enough for people to understand. Mm. You know, there weren't any super complicated like relationship strings throughout the ensemble cast. It wasn't like someone's mother-in-law is also that cousin, and like she was like, she looked like that in the past life or whatever reason. Like, I just feel like they made it simple enough. And so that made it like easy to follow the cast and easy to, you know, just get involved in their storylines as well.
Mm-hmm. But that was also some of the criticism that some people had, like, especially when I was talking about this with Stephanie, is because I think, which might have also been my problem, was I pitched this show to her as something that was more focused on the main male, the main leads and their marriage and them trying to figure out if they want to stay married, which if you come into the show like really wanting to get into that specifically, they don't spend as much time with the main plot as you think, because they do rear off into explaining all these other storylines, though they don't explain everything too. Like, it's not, there was a whole post that TVN made kind of like explaining the timeline of events and like how especially our secondary leads kind of got to know each other and became, especially our crew of villains, how they kind of like are connected to each other, because it was, they don't really explain everything about the actual plot of the show. It's just more of spending all of these times with these character moments.
Yeah, I don't think the show's goal was to, you know, like try to explain those things. Mm-hmm. I think that was, like, at least for me, like, as I was watching it, that was always, like, on the back burner, you know, like, all the business stuff and all the power struggle between brothers and whatnot. That was always, like, on a back burner thing. And it was, like, I know, like, a lot of the central, like, episodes, like, you know, 10, 11, 12 or something, they really focused on the business aspect of, like, the power struggle of the Queen's crew. And despite that, I think people were still trying to, you know, like, they still kept bringing the male lead and the female lead to the forefront, even in those situations. Like, even in the moments where it was getting, like, too overwhelming with the business stuff, I would say, like, they kept the show grounded in the characters. Mm. And so it helped. That, like, that really helps, because I don't know, like, the previous drama that I watched before this was A Time Called You.
Oh gosh.
And if you have watched that drama, like, the timelines were going crazy. Okay. Like, somewhere along the lines, we just lost the plot.
Right.
We just lost the plot of, like, what is going on. And by the end, we were just happy that, okay, it just all resolved. Like, I don't want to know how it worked out. Mm-hmm. So, like, coming from
that. I don't know how
that,
we're here, but we're here. That's all that matters.
Yeah, exactly. So coming from that, like, to this drama with still such a big ensemble cast, I was still, like, able to, like, keep following where they were going and what was happening without getting too much into the weeds of, like, you know, crazy who killed who and, like, whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Although I came to this drama after watching Impossible Air on Disney Plus, okay. Or Royal Road, I think is, like, the Korean title. And I kind of wish they had more posts explaining the plot, because there was, you know, also, like, you know, schemes of, like, stock exchanges and paper companies and, like, cutthroat business deals, yeah, and things like that, where I'm like, oh, I could have used this with that other show. So I really appreciated, yeah, though, that TVN added that post kind of, like, explaining some things, even though I could have gone through the whole show without it.
Yeah. I think after watching, like, Reborn Rich, I was just like, oh, I know exactly what paper companies are. I exactly know what a slush fund is. Like, I was like, I am full of, like, economist right now. So, yeah, but I agree with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, do we have any more non-constructive criticism for the show? Any other quibbles before we move on to our social commentary section?
I do want to give a shout out to Queen Bomja, the aunt in the show. She was the OTP, like, the true MVP of the show. I loved her character so much. What else? Yeah, I loved her character. I also want to give a shout out to the costume and the set department.
Oh,
because,
yes. Oh, gosh.
First of all, so somebody pointed out on Twitter, and, like, someone had just made an article about this as well. And where they talked about how Hye-in's, the mm-hmm. female lead's outfits, represented her mood.
Ooh.
And so she had, like, you know, for example, the red dress that she wore, that was like she was going for revenge. It was the scene with Song Joong-ki.
The Song Joong-ki cameo as Vincenzo character.
Yes, his Vincenzo character. So she wore this, like, bright red outfit for that, or like, for example, the white outfit that she wore when she revealed her illness publicly for the first time.
Oh,
and so, like, okay. I really appreciated that, you know, like, there was a lot of thought put into her outfits. Mm-hmm. And again, the set design, someone pointed out how the paintings in the Hong's residence also, like, you know, reflected on the character that, you know, the painting was hanging in their room, like mm-hmm. things like that. And but overall, I just want to say, like, this is a show about this third generation Chaebol heiress, right? And mm-hmm. so you have to depict the, you know, the wealth and, right. you know, like the fact that they are like super duper rich, which can be very hard for a lot of dramas because that means a lot of production costs go towards that, which a lot of budgets don't allow for those things. But with TVN being involved and Netflix being involved, like they put in the budget for that. It was very convincing that, yes, this is this giant, you know, business mogul family. And so, yeah, I just want to give a shout out to them as well.
Right. That is something that we talked about, like during our pre-talk for this episode, was this display of wealth from the Hong family and the Queen's group. Like it also in general like served to build them up so much so that when they get knocked down, it's so much more impactful.
That was so funny. Oh my God. I love a riches to rags situation. Like mm-hmm. Schitt's Creek is one of my favorite shows ever. And I loved that, you know, scene of like Hong's basically like showing up, you know, at what was his family called?
I don't know. Baek family?
The Baek family. The Baeks of Yeongdori. That was also like a really good way of like, you know, grounding these characters and like showing a little bit more of like a human aspect to these characters besides just the flashiness of their, you know, outfits and their fancy dinners and hunting vacations and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I think during those episodes, we really got to see a lot more character development from all the characters from the Hong family, especially the mother and So-chul, the younger brother, mm-hmm. like really becoming a man in himself. You know, like really standing up like, for himself.
A real boy, almost, right? Because he comes from this very coddled, very affluent position.
The poor guy had to sleep on on the hardwood floor or whatever
for the first time in his life.
And I loved that scene specifically because the husband was like, I have never slept on the floor either. Because, you know, typically in like shows where even if like we have like, you know, Chaebol families and whatnot, the dad is always like grounded.
Yes.
You know, like the dad is always shown as this guy who's just going to be like adaptive to everything. And, you know, he's, you know, like born farmer family or whatever. And like he made it big.
Yeah.
But in this, it like really showed like, okay, so even the dad is, you know, has never slept on the floor or like has, you know, slept, like done those, you know, things that common people do.
And they even built him up to be this like such a scary, intimidating character. Yeah. But like when you take away the wealth and you take away all the influence, at the end of the day, he's just a guy that who's never had any hardships in his life.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be part of my criticism as well. So I don't know if you want to get into that.
right, for the social commentary parts or...
Well, this is just my criticism in the sense that, you know, they really built him up in the sense like this scary dude, especially in the first few episodes where like Kim So-hyun's character was like so scared of, you know, betraying the father and dad.
Yes.
And then I was just like, he doesn't have a spine. Like this man, he's just all bluff. You know, like he wasn't that scary. Like he did nothing in terms of like being a scary, you know, dad. He was just stern and like he had a really soft spot for his daughter. Mm-hmm. And in connection to that, he had a soft spot for his son-in-law as well. And so I was like, why are you so scared?
any other criticisms or comments that we want to talk about the show before we move on?
Oh, this is really silly, but like her having perfect hair after brain surgery.
Oh.
I was like, not even like you know, a patch of hair was lost, like nothing. Or like even him having surgery and like him getting knocked out or whatever, and he has perfect hair as well at the end.
It's yeah. Like, what? Or the fact that her cancer just miraculously is gone, right? By the end of the show.
That was, again, yeah, that was like part of my, like, sort of why a lot of people were like, you know, skeptical of the finale, or like, you know, people weren't really like super happy about it. Mm-hmm. It was also because, like, for me as well, like, okay, her cancer was made out to be this like really big thing.
Right.
And then later on, it was the next big thing was that she will lose her memories.
Yeah, her amnesia.
And it was like her long-term memory. And so, and then she has the surgery, cancer goes away, and somehow the memories don't really matter anyways, like, at all. So I was just like, so what is the big conflict now? Like, if she's just going to be happily ever after with Kim So-yeon's character, then, you know, like, why did they make it such a big deal?
Right. So. And especially because there are a lot of moments, like, I feel like the amnesia in this one is, as we see in amnesia in a lot of other instances, where it's to bringing the characters back together, where, like, even if she had no idea who he was, she would still fall in love with him. Yeah. But that would only really be a conflict if Park Sung-hoon's character was like an actual second male lead. Like, he never really had a chance at all in the show.
Yeah.
Which was so heartbreaking for me to see, as like the watching the character kind of fighting for something that you just know he's never getting.
Yeah. I think it's like worth highlighting Park Sung-hoon's act. Is that Park Sung-hoon? No. What's his name?
For the second male lead.
Park Sung-hoon, yeah, male lead.
Yeah, huh? Park Sung-hoon, okay.
Park Sung-hoon's character, I mean, it's like worth highlighting, like, this, he was painted out to be the second male lead, but like very early on, we got hints that he is not okay in the head. And it was like, I think, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but like that, like very early on, like just set people off of like, okay, there is no way that we're going to get even like an episode's worth of storyline of them being together, you know? Because typically, like, you have, if you have a second male lead, you would have like a little bit of the storyline where she moves away from the male lead, first male lead, and she goes to the second male lead, or vice versa if there's a second female lead. But like very early on, like right after the hunting episode, I believe, like it was like very clear, like, he does not have a chance. Like, there is no way she's gonna fall for him.
Yeah.
So,
but they still didn't give up on him completely. Like, I do feel like they gave him a few redeemable opportunities, and at least like tried to show that he's not simply just like a mindless like psychopath. Like, he like in the flashback, like, oh, he killed the dog, but it was actually he killed the dog to save Hae-in. Like,
yeah.
Oh, and like when he brought Hae-in back to the company so that she could have her job again and like start working on her career like she wanted, or like all these like little things that he would kind of do to redemptive for
the character. I think I mean, that was like one of my points that I had written down, was like, Park Ji-yeon, the screenwriter that you are, like, obviously, like, Yoon Sang's character was always like the antagonist, and people very strongly hated him for it. But at the end, like when he was shot dead, like I still felt bad. Like, I was like, damn, that man, he did not deserve, like, he deserved a better ending, you know?
Yeah. And especially with the performances that he was giving.
Exactly. I mean, especially at the end, he was like, because by the end, you sort of, you know, figured out why he became the way he became.
Right.
Especially the mom, or like the girlfriend that I was referring to. Like, she was the real villain of the show.
Oh, 100%.
And so I think, like, you started getting a little bit more empathetic towards him, in the sense that, you know, like, he did have like a really hard childhood and upbringing. And so And that obviously goes to Park Ji-yeon as a screenwriter and, like, you know, developing these characters so much that, you know, like, even at the end, despite all his psychotic behavior, you're still, you know, feeling sad when he is killed off.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, I mean, his performance was amazing in this show. I mean, he deserves a rom-com.
Yes,
return.
Please. Which isn't going to be anytime soon because we've got Squid Game right after this.
Wait, is he going to be in Squid Game?
Yeah, his next project that's coming out is the new Squid Game. So.
Oh my God. Oh my God, this is like three back-to-back, like, really dark roles for him.
Yeah, if you're like me and you also love Park Sung-hoon, go watch Into the Ring. That's his last character. He's the male lead and it's a rom-com.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but back to Queen of Tears. You know, like we mentioned, like other shows that we've talked about before as for K-drama cast, like DP, you know, Inspector Woo, Internee Woo, Flower of Evil. There's always like very clear like social commentary takeaways that the writers or the directors are really trying to get out of the show. Queen of Tears, not so much, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of just straightforward, mellow drama, almost makjang-y, you know, show. But Syed, were there any other points that you think that you can maybe take from this show as far as like social commentary?
I think, I mean, K-dramas in themselves, like the concept itself is fantasy, you know, like even I'm not talking about like fantasy in the sense like there's magic and fairies and unicorns.
Yeah.
But and like just in general, like, you know, it's very idealistic. It's very much, you know, like what people aspire to be, I guess. So I think like this drama itself, like it doesn't have like a very, you know, strong social commentary stance with any social topics. But, you know, just the idea of like, I think it was, shout out to A Ping's Bomi.
Oh, right. Bomi.
The lovely secretary of Haein. I think in one of the episodes, she talks about how, like, she starts off saying, like, you know, these emotions like love and affection and hatred and all of those things are abstract nouns. And so you can't, like, you know, it's abstract stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, in the final episode, I believe, she says, you know, like, love and affection and all those things are abstract nouns, but they are, you know, they're very powerful and they can't be seen, but, you know, they can be felt very strongly. Mm-hmm. And I do think, like, I know that is like a very cheesy thing to take away from it, but like, it's still like, it holds true, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it holds true. Like, I think, you know, some of the things that they sort of mention in the show is like, you know, like this lack of communication and it like obviously adds to the dramatics of the show, like, you know, miscommunication tropes and
right.
not talking to each other and whatnot. But I just think
right.
like it's like I like beyond the male and female lead, like not talking to each other and like just going through such a traumatic experience all by themselves, then thinking the other person doesn't want to talk or doesn't want to communicate. I think that it is like a very real thing that people do with their own
right.
lives.
Which is why it's so frustrating as a viewer. It's like, these are people that clearly
exactly.
still love each other, but they just don't talk about it.
Exactly. And when they do, and it's like in like, you know, riddles and whatnot, and then you're like, just say it, okay? Just say what you're thinking.
Right.
Instead of being so confusing and like, you know, talking in riddles and whatnot. And so, but I do also think, like, for example, the lack of communication between Haein and her mom and like that impacted their relationship and like drifting them apart. I think that is something that a lot of people do relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like that is a big takeaway from the drama is like, you know, trauma. I think trauma is like how to, like, you know, deal with trauma and like how to process that is like a big part of this show.
Yeah.
I think each character really carries like a little bit of a baggage from their past, and like this lack of communication, like, really exasperates all of those things.
Right. Yeah, because with Hyunwoo and Haeyeon, it's the fact that they lost a child. With Haeyeon and her mom, it's the fact that her mom lost her child, but her other child survived in the process. And those conflicting feelings and feelings of guilt and also anger and frustration. And with Haeyeon, with losing her own child, those feelings of guilt and anger and frustration with herself. Like, one of the reasons why I think she's so obsessed with the $1 trillion club is she went through this experience where she, who was somebody who was expected to excel at all things and be perfect, failed at something that was so natural and simple and expected of a woman in society. So her kind of her way to come out from that is to focus on her career and focus on other things that she only she can achieve.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why I liked this drama as well was because usually when K-dramas do depict those kinds of, you know, traumatic experiences or you know, like going through something like that, like especially with like death and things like that, it's in a K-drama that is very heavily focused on the topic itself. Like it would be like a, you know, crime drama or like a legal drama or like a melodrama where the central storyline is that. But we don't see that in rom-com dramas. We don't see this kind of depiction of the trauma of like miscarrying a baby or this sort of conflict of like, you know, losing a child while the other one survives, things like that. And I think it's like, that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed the drama, was like it was able to like weave those things into the storyline without it becoming too overwhelming for the viewer. But at the same time, you know, like the actors were able to like convey that heaviness in the scenes that they were like talking about,
like,
those things.
I wasn't overwhelmed, but I was sure as hell crying. I was a queen of tears so many times in this show. It was not pretty.
It was done really well. That's how I would always like describe it. It was like really well written. It was really well acted. It wasn't, as we said, like it wasn't overwhelming, but it wasn't also just like, besides the cancer stuff, it wasn't taking light of those situations.
Right. Okay. I think before we wrap up, is there anything else that we want, and maybe somebody to say about Queen of Tears? Like, as at the end of the day, are we gonna go rewatch it? Do we recommend it to other people to go watch, especially people who haven't watched K-drama before?
You know what's funny is like I never rewatch K-dramas.
What?
The only K-drama that I've rewatched is What's Wrong with Secretary Kim.
Oh, okay.
And even that, like, I only pick out the scenes with like the funny moments. I don't rewatch dramas at all.
Weird. I cannot relate at all. I have like dramas that I watch like depending on the season. Like I have dramas that I watch in the winter and like in the summer and like
I think it's more because like I think for me it's more because like I just can't keep up. You know, like I'm also like the kind of person who wants to watch what's current instead of going back and watching something old. And when if I'm watching something that's current, then I don't have time for like another thing.
Yeah.
So I almost like always start with something that's like has had a few episodes in, and then I'm gonna start it. I also don't like watching like super like live shows, you know, like that are like actually going like week by week. I do like to collect a few episodes before I watch.
Binge it out.
Yeah, like
wait,
not like
don't
full
have to wait
16.
Every week for that cliffhanger to resolve.
The only drama that I did that for was nobody else has ever watched this drama, but it was called Queen of 7 Days, another queen drama. It was Queen of 7 Days, and it was this historical drama, and I just got really into it, and I watched it as it happened. And yeah, it was painful, obviously. Like, I never want to do that again. Mm. But I actually had that drama in my notes because it also took a really giant time leap.
Yeah. Oh, right, the ending. Okay, so let's talk
about the ending a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, did it... Okay, actually, I'm going to go first.
Go ahead.
We talked, again, in our pre-discussion of the show, where I was so convinced that Hong Hye-in was going to die at the end of the series. And I was technically right.
Yes, you were.
I was technically right. But they chose to kill her off in a way that was more humane, in a way that was less traumatic to the viewer. You know, she ends up just dying of old age, which, so Kim Soo-hyun's character is still left, you know, to mourn her, but in a way that hasn't felt unfulfilled. Like, you know that they've, in those quick flashes of that, you know, they've lived a life, they had a kid, you know, they were able to stop crying.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because everyone was expecting her to die.
Yes.
Or at least, like, them, like, not like necessarily like explicitly showing that she died, but like just this intention of like she would die.
She almost
eventually
dies so many times. And he cries about her almost dying so many times. I felt like they were just desensitizing us to it, so when it happened, we wouldn't be as mad.
Exactly. But like, I personally thought like she would, like, they showed their daughter, right? Mm. So like, which means that they, you know, lived and, you know, a decent, fulfilling life or whatever. Mm-hmm. What I was expecting was they would show the daughter and then she would die. Like, she had the daughter, she, you know, like, became a mother and, like, she, you know, had a nice, happily married life with her husband. Mm-hmm. And then, if, like, after that period of time, she would, like, pass away. Like some undisclosed amount of time.
Like what she I had was a cancer like, relapse
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, something like that. Like, I wasn't expecting them to take a 50-year time lapse and then show them in old age and then she passes away. I'm like, why? What was the point of that? Like, I was actually mad at that because I was like, that is so unnecessary because first you make us all feel happy that she lived and she had a kid and, like, you know, all of those things. And then unnecessarily, like, he's revisiting the stupid garden and, like, he's, you know.
In Germany.
In Germany of all places. I'm like, why?
Oh, see, I had the exact opposite reaction. I was at the end because, again, I was so expecting her to just die of cancer before any of that happened. Mm. So for me, it made my heart so full just like watching the end of their story, which is, you know, something that you don't get a lot in K-dramas and why so many K-dramas, you know, the endings fall flat because, you know, there's sometimes only one season. Sometimes there's a cliffhanger of an ending and sometimes you're left wondering where their story goes after. But this one felt like a actual closing chapter on this story with Hong Hye-in and Baek Hyun-woo, where I was in tears. Like once you see that old man and Kim Soo-hyun's OST starts playing, I was crying. But they weren't just sad tears. It was happiness and just I had good feelings about seeing this couple resolve their story.
I also think, like, it's just, like, for me in, like, my head, like, because they showed the ending for all their characters, right? Like, where they ended up in the story. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the aunt, like, having her small town love relationship with Mr. Rat, which is one of the millions of references to Crash Landing on You in this show.
Right. Which for me, as somebody who actually hasn't watched Crash Landing on You, like a lot of it went over my head, but I could notice when they were things.
Oh my God. You have to go watch it. But yeah, no, I think like similar to her other shows as well, like Crash Landing on You being one of them. Mm-hmm. I think like I always like it when we see what all the cast ended up doing. You know,
right. Like, especially with the show focusing so much more
exactly,
on the other characters.
Like, I wanted to see, like, for example, like, they showed, you know, what's her name? Dahe, like, mm-hmm. serving her prison sentence and then coming out and, like, greeting her son. It was such a, a wholesome, like, thing. Like, her smiling at her and, like, she smiles back. And I was just like, why? And, like, so all of those things happen, right? And, like, mm-hmm. we see Hyunwoo and Haein have a kid and, you know, be a happy married couple. Mm-hmm. But what happened for me was that once they did the 50-year lapse, I was like, okay, now you are only showing me what happened to those two after the 50 years.
Oh, okay.
I left the cast behind. You know, like, you left the cast behind again. So that, like, bugs me a lot. Because now I'm like, well, what happened to the second lead? What happened to your daughter? What happened to Yongduri? You know, like, all those things are, like, popping up in my head. So, I don't know. I just felt like if they had shown the 3-year or 5-year time lapse of, like, them having a daughter and, like, left it at that, it would have been a much, like... Even if this showed her dying after that, like, I don't mind the death. I mind the fact that it's just the two of them at the end and not the rest of the cast.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's just me being very picky about it.
No, I totally get where you're coming from. You're left wondering.
Because at the 50-year time, I'm pretty sure, like, the older cast of the show is gone. Like, they probably passed away. And that makes me sad, because I'm like, oh my God, Baek Hyun-woo's mom passed away.
Oh, no. It's like, okay. You know, so writers, if you ever want to do, like, a movie or other extras, a second season, who knows?
I mean, that's another thing I love about K-dramas is that they always figure out a way to leave space for a second season.
Mm-hmm. Even when there's never going to be one.
There is never going to be one. Everyone wanted a second season for, what was that show that Hyunbin was in? Memories of Alhambra. Everyone wanted a second season for that show. Never happened. But they left it at a note where you could have a second season.
Mm-hmm. I feel so spoiled as a K-drama fan in this day and age where I'm like, oh, second season is totally a possibility.
Netflix,
especially with this show breaking records. I mean, I didn't get a chance to watch it, but they actually aired 2 additional special episodes of not necessarily of, like, storyline, but some more behind the scenes and scenes that weren't included in the show and interviews with the cast and crew. So, you know, it could very well happen.
Yeah. I think it's also, like, this is going to be a bit of a tangent, but it reminded me of a lot of C dramas and Taiwanese dramas.
Ooh, okay.
With, like, the long, elongated storylines of, you know, like the 50-year time lapse. Like, I know someone tweeted about it and, like, being like, is this, like, a record of all time, like a 50-year time lapse? Which it is not, but, like, other dramas have done it. But I think it's, like, it's not a very common thing in K-drama land.
No.
But I have seen Taiwanese dramas who have that. Like, they, like, really, like, extend it out and, like, make sure that you know exactly what happened before they are, like, buried in the ground. So... like, it reminded me of that, like, the melodramaticness of this, like, elongated ending. Mm-hmm. It was, like, similar to that. But yeah, I think, I mean, people have always have, like, thoughts about the finale. Like, I thought it was a very well done finale. It mm-hmm. also had, like, a really good pacing throughout the entire, like, duration of it. You know, we didn't, like, dwell upon one thing for, like, 5 episodes.
All right. So I definitely recommend the show to other people to watch. I think, like you said, Syed, it's a good starter drama because it has all the things, and it's especially a good starter drama for people who are coming into K-dramas now, and the stories that we're starting to see more of now in K-drama that we usually would only see maybe in, like, Korean movie or film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, just in terms of, like, I think It's a good starting K-drama because it's like, it's modern. It's not dated. Mm-hmm. You know, I always like hesitate when people say like, oh, if you want to watch if your first drama needs to be Boys Over Flower. I'm like, if I show Boys Over Flower to someone right now, they are going to like run away in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't feel dated is the biggest thing. It's like Goblin was big and like it was, you know, it was a thing for its time. I think Queen of Tears like fits really well into the K-drama land scene that we are seeing right now of like more mature and involved storylines and, you know, chemistry and all of those things. So yeah, I just think like it's like a very appropriate, time appropriate K-drama starter kit. Still watching all the time as you name I'm so
wraps up this episode of the K-Drama Cast. Before we go, though, Syed, do you have anything that you want to plug for our guests or our listeners?
I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It was
right?
such a long time coming to be on a K-Drama Cast
and this episode. This is the last time. We're gonna few more, at least this year.
Well, I will make a comeback. I just want to say, like, if you guys want to follow us at Genius Korea on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, all the social media account platforms, we also have a collaboration with an Album a Day podcast, where we talk about some of the more underrated and off radar K-pop and Korean music releases. So be sure to check out the episode there. And yeah, thank you so much for having me, Michaela.
Yes, and I can't wait for our next K-drama. Okay, who knows what it'll be.
Yep.
Guys, subscribe and stay tuned to see which K-drama we talk about next on the K-drama cast.
Yeah.
But guys, I am your PD name, Michaela, from the K-pop cast. You can find me at our K-pop cast Slack. And you, if you want to support our show and maybe support all of our editing that goes on here and to keep the lights on, you can donate to us at our Ko-fi. Link is also in the episode description. Okay, goodbye everybody.
Bye.